What if people with type 1 diabetes had the power to manage their condition without finger sticks? To always know their glucose levels and where they're heading with just a glance at their smart device? To customize alerts and alarms to help keep them in range? All this knowledge powered by a small wearable. Introducing the Dexcom G6. Make knowledge your superpower. For a list of compatible smart devices, visit dexcom.com/compatibility. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G6 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions.
Welcome into Tomorrow with Dave Graveline, the interactive radio network program with the latest in high-tech products and services and the experts who bring them to you. This is Into Tomorrow. Here's Dave Graveline.
Just like the dude said, you are tuned into Tomorrow. And yep, I am Dave Graveline. This for the weekend of November 16th, 2018, Thanksgiving Eve weekend. Thanksgiving weekend Eve. So, well, the week before Thanksgiving. You get the idea. And we thank you for tuning in. Erasmo is sitting tight in the control room here in our Miami studios.
Chris Graveline.
In Atlanta this week is Joe working with the show, and Horatio out of New York, and Beth out of Naples. We're just everywhere. You never know where to find any of us. But we're all here on your radio on what is no doubt your favorite radio station, or podcast, or stream, hearing the show. And we're glad you are. And more importantly, we're very happy. We're thrilled, you might even say. You can say that when you call into the show, because we want to hear you. You get to hear us, or you have to hear us. You have to put up with us. We would love to hear you. And you can do that very easily by the phone number that Chris is about to give you anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, holidays included, because we have the system up and running for you. And then we want to get you on the air the very next week on the program and address your digital dilemma, answer your questions, have you share your knowledge with our listeners, maybe share your favorite app these days, whatever the case might be.
That number is 800-899-INTO. That's 800-899-4686.
There you go. Some tech news and commentary, and then we're going to jump to your calls. Wayne coming up from Decatur, Illinois. So we've been talking lately about foldable phones. Well, it appears that the cost for Samsung's foldable smartphone could be as much as $1,770. That, according to a South Korean report, Samsung's mobile division head said they will initially make more than 1 million phones, which will be available, they say, before next June. Foldable phones from Samsung for $1,700. And, of course, if you're not the first on your block to have one, then they'll plummet to $800 later.
Yeah, well, that's why they have to tell people ahead of time, you know, way ahead of time, so they have enough time to save your money and, you know, keep your quarters in the, you know, on the side to get that $1,700 worth to buy the phone.
That's it. Just start saving from now so that by June you might have enough.
You might have a down payment for it.
Yes. To buy. Just fold your dollar bills and save them to get a foldable phone.
Yeah.
Maybe something to look forward to.
According to a new study conducted by psychologists at the University of Pennsylvania, all those likes, shares, videos, posts, and stories on Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat could be making you depressed and lonely.
Oh.
The study has established a causal link between time spent on social media and feelings of depression or loneliness. For the study, researchers examined 143 undergraduates at the University of Pennsylvania over a number of weeks. Participants had their mood and sense of well-being tested using 7 different scales. Half the participants used social media as normal, while the other half limited their usage to only 10 minutes per day for each of the platforms.
I wonder what is normal.
I don't know. We didn't say that here. But those who cut down on social media saw clinically significant decreases in depression and loneliness over the course of the study. Those who were in the control group who did not change their behavior saw no improvement.
Interesting.
So they're saying the less you use social media, the happier you will be.
And I agree with that. I mean, that's why I've been calling it anti-social media for some time now, because it more appears that way than anything else. We can't seem to get anybody off their phones anymore. And if you haven't noticed, or maybe you haven't been at a restaurant lately or something, but go in and sit down and eat somewhere and look around, and you're going to see people at almost every table on their phones. And that's just not right. I still like to abide by a rule that I have pledged a few times, and that is everybody pile their phones up on the table. And the first one to reach for their phone pays for dinner. You'd be surprised how people will leave their phones alone for an entire dinner. Of course, they eat fast, and then they say they got to go because they got to check their phone. But at least you're socializing with each other and being less antisocial. So try that. See if it works. Of course, there's always that one person that says, I'm not going to give up my phone. Okay, well, then I guess you're not welcome at this table. Bye now. You could always do that.
Well, this last weekend, I went out to dinner with my son, and I about fell off my unicorn when he said, Papa, there's going to be no phones at the table. We're going to talk and be a normal family.
He said that?
He said that to me.
And no
way. He's usually the first one to say, can I play with your phone? But so, yeah.
But
so,
wait, let's go back. You were on a unicorn? You fell off your unicorn? What?
But yeah, the six-year-old actually told me that we were going to not have phones at dinner and we were going to be a normal family.
I am very, very proud of Cameron.
Call in, win stuff. Thank you.
And thank you, Cameron. That was awesome that he actually told you, put your phone away. We're going to just have a dinner and talk.
Yeah.
Did he talk?
A little bit. He played with his toys. But he did bring two toys in from the car, but I guess it wasn't the phone.
Well, that's good. And it wasn't a tablet or anything. Right. They were just like dinosaurs and figures, stuff, yeah. Action figures that he likes to play with. That's wild. I'm so proud of him. Oh, my gosh. I have to be sure and remember to tell him that when we see him on your next weekend. It's funny because people tell me that they hear me saying, you know, we only get them every other weekend. It's people say, what's this wheat stuff? You and the frog in your pocket? No, it's me and Chris. But, yeah, it's Chris with the custody thing. But I consider myself part of we only get them every other weekend now. And it just breaks my heart. But that's a whole other story. This isn't Delilah's show. So we have to talk tech. So we are doing just that. The J.D. Power 2018 Wireless Router Satisfaction Report. Whew, that was a big long name. Is out this week. They measured 10 factors, including Wi-Fi range, reliability, speed of uploads and downloads, ability to restore connection easily, security capabilities, price, ease of use, variety of features, intuitive user interface, and customer service, if you will. Linksys ranks highest in customer satisfaction with wireless routers for the first time, performing particularly well in reliability of service, ease of setup during installation, range of Wi-Fi signal strength, and the ability to restore service with minimal effort. Their security and customer service experience was also good. Asus and TP-Link tied for second place. Again, we're talking about the Wireless Router Satisfaction Report from J.D. Power. And Netgear ranks fourth. Belkin came in fifth. So if you're looking for your next wireless router, you might want to keep those things in mind. Again, the top one was Linksys, followed by Asus, TP-Link, Netgear, and then Belkin. So if money was no object and you're just looking for the best in all of those categories, well, there you go. Then Linksys might get your business.
There you go. A wheelchair used by physicist Stephen Hawking has sold at auction for almost $393,000, nearly 20 times more than the pre-sale estimate, while a copy of his doctoral thesis fetched almost $767,000.
Holy cow!
Yeah. The motorized chair was used by Hawking after he was paralyzed with motor neuron disease, also called Lou Gehrig's disease. He died in March at the age of 76. Proceeds from the chair sale will go to two charities, the Stephen Hawking Foundation and the Motor Neuron Disease Association.
Wow. Well, good for them. At least they're going to some good causes.
Yes.
But interesting that people would pay that kind of, especially for the thesis. I mean, I'm sure it's online for free.
Well, but it's probably the original copy.
And well, I understand.
Years from now, it'll be like owning something that was originally written by Einstein or something.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have put him in that same category.
Yeah, rightly so. Yeah. He was certainly a brilliant guy. eMarketer predicts that online holiday sales are expected to reach $123.7 billion. And mobile will account for 5.4% of all holiday sales. To best use this advantage, retailers like Amazon, Target, even Walmart, are adding more mobile options for consumers, including mobile checkout and payments, because they realize that's what people want. Short attention spans, short time to be shopping for things, even if they're just coming in. Used to be, get them in the store to spend as much time as they can, buy lots of stuff. They realize it's not working as well. I mean, if you have that kind of time, wonderful. You know, if you like to go shopping, just walk around the entire store, see what there is and what's on sale. Hey, go for it. More power to you. I haven't had that kind of time in years. So usually I go in, I get what I need, I leave. I don't browse. You know, I don't window shop.
Well, I've become a big fan of shopping on an app and picking it up at the store, so I don't even have to go in really into the store.
Well, that's
even
good.
At Home Depot or Lowe's, you know, they have a pickup area. I'll order it on the app and I'll just go pick up at the store, because especially those two stores, because if I end up walking around, I'll go broke.
Yeah, exactly. And look at how many stores, Walmarts, Wally Worlds, as I like to call them and stuff, have been doing pickup areas. Again, don't even go in. You could just pull around the side, and some guy meets you in the back alley with a bag. Here's your items. Look over his shoulder. Okay, go. You know, but they're doing that because it just makes more sense, because they're realizing they're losing business to people who are simply ordering online and not even coming to the store. So they say, we're not getting them in anyway. So let's get them to the store. We sell our inventory, and that way the store itself, the brick-and-mortar location, still does its job and is making sales and not having to close, hopefully. But they're going to just run it outside to you or go by the side door and they'll give it to you and whatnot.
Japan is facing a population collapse that threatens its very existence. And as with many of its problems, Japan is not looking for conventional solutions. It's pressing forward in the uniquely Japanese way. The country is looking to strengthen its diminishing human population with a growing population of robots.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And, of course, where would it start? Yeah. Japan.
Well, apparently humans aren't having enough babies. The country has one of the world's lowest birth rates.
So what? Robots are going to have babies?
Apparently. Yeah. Coupled with a strict immigration policy, the nation's numbers are on the decline, and they're about to reach freefall. According to Japan's health ministry, the population will shrink from 128 million to below 100 million by 2050.
Wow.
By then, Japan is expected to lose citizens at a rate of 900,000 per year. So in a laboratory in Japan, roboticists are working on perfecting highly realistic humanoids who look, and in some cases fidget and move, just like humans.
Oh, that's sad.
And they will one day walk among us.
Oh, that's real sad. Yikes. Are they going to then have upgrades so that they sort of grow, get bigger, and, you know, learn different things just like a baby would, and then it becomes a toddler, and then so forth, and, oh, boy, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Oh,
I always kept saying, not in my lifetime will we have robots like that, but they're already working on that. Interesting. Yeah. And, of course, we've seen a lot of interesting robots in various trade shows as we travel the world as well. And, yep, certainly we've seen a lot in Japan and in China and so forth. But even in the U.S., they're doing a lot of cool things. How about, like, the dog robot that can run uphill and you can kick it over and it gets back up again and it will actually fetch. And not get tired. Of course, the batteries can run out, but still.
No, I'd be impressed if you kick it over, if it got up and kicked you back.
No, that wouldn't impress me. That would be robots taking over.
Well, it would teach you to kick it. It would teach you not to kick it.
Well, but you kick it to test it. You know, like, does it actually handle it? You know, depending on how hard you kick it, it might just adjust and not fall over. But if you kick it hard enough, it falls over, but then it gets back up again.
It gets back up and it just gives you a little friendly little nudge.
Okay, yeah. I'll go with that. And then maybe says something like, all right, knock it off. Uh-huh. You see, I can get back up again. Get down and get back up again and all that. Apple's preparing for trial against Qualcomm over the company's patent license fees for using its chips in iPhones. And it's not talking about potential settlements, a source says. This is in contrast to a July statement from the Qualcomm CEO. So I guess we'll see how all of that plays out. Stay tuned. We'll stay on top of it for you and let you know if you care. But Apple's always seemingly suing somebody and getting sued, too. So.
Apple, Samsung, they're all embattled in endless lawsuits.
And it's like, how dare you make a smartphone that has rounded edges? That's us. It's like, oh, please.
Yeah.
that's a box, you know. Now, what's in it's a different story, or what it might do, still a different story. But, yeah, you need to pay us because you have a button. Oh, enough, people.
Yeah.
Can't we all just get along?
No.
Wayne in Decatur, Illinois, listens on 1340 AM, WSOY. Hello, Wayne.
I'm aware that NASA, when the Apollo program was going on, they were using rather rudimentary computers. I'm wondering how those computers compare to the computers that we have in our homes today, or even on our cell phones. Our cell phones, perhaps, put it this way, more complicated than the computers that NASA used in sending the Apollo program and all the astronauts to the moon. Thank you.
Well, Wayne, interestingly enough, and I love that question, too, because it kind of makes us ponder, and I got Chris's attention as our tech historian as well. Those computers were less powerful than just about any electronic device you can find these days. Buzz Aldrin's personal slide rule that he flew to the moon with was up for auction about a decade ago. Modern astronauts probably don't even bother with a calculator, let alone one of those. Times most certainly have changed.
Yeah, the thing is that computers aboard Apollo, just like the computers that do plenty of specialized tasks these days, were single purpose. Your smartphone can find you anywhere in the world, translate a sign for you so that you know if you're about to walk into a coffee shop or a shampoo factory, and then let you have a live video chat with a friend while you wait for the car that you requested through an app to come pick you up. Now, that makes them great devices, but it also introduces a very large code base that's prone to inefficiencies and errors. Now, a lot of very important devices run on relatively simple computers even today. For example, ABS brakes run on simple computers. Though likely far more powerful than Apollo's, they can't outthink your smartphone. But they can reliably stop a car when you ask them to without being prone to spinning around in little circles for 2 minutes while they figure out what to do next.
Oh, that's kind of a Windows jab, isn't it?
Yeah.
Spinning around. Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha. I like that.
Now, the Apollo computers were tasked with very few select tasks, and they did them well, even if they wouldn't have been able to respond to the astronauts saying, "Spaceship, play Fly Me to the Moon," while they were flying to the moon.
Oh, nice.
Now, you can be sure that any rover, satellite, or rocket that's been sent anywhere by NASA in recent years is far more updated and powerful, but even they may be less powerful than a smartphone for the simple fact that smartphones are really easy to charge at night, but a piece of metal flying across the void can't easily reach the electric grid, so it's better to keep those devices efficient.
Yeah, some good points. Now, if you're thinking about this in terms of raw power, there are remote controls today that have more powerful brains than those rockets did. And thermostats and security cameras, just about anything else you can think of these days, more powerful than those computers on the spacecrafts. The computer on board each of the Apollo command modules and the lunar module was called the AGC, Apollo Guidance Computer. Completed in 1966, it was a general-purpose machine. If you want to see what the astronauts were working with, Google AGC Simulator. You can try it out for yourself and see how it compares to your phone. It's really kind of cool. In fact, the AGC was one of the first computers that used integrated circuits, you know, microchips. Its performance was comparable to the home computers that would arrive on the market 11 years later in 1977, like the Apple II, the Commodore PET, and the Trash 80, the TRS-80. It had about 4 kilobytes, that's kilobyte, of RAM, and 40 kilobyte of ROM, the master program running the show. Compare that to the 4 gigabits of RAM in an iPhone XR. It ran at 43 kilohertz, while a typical phone tops out at 2.5 gigahertz.
Yeah, now that's a lot of messy details involved in calculating relative power between computer systems. But a ballpark answer? The mobile in your pocket has over 1 million times the memory and roughly 60,000 times the processing power. But don't think the AGC was rudimentary. By today's standards, it may be underpowered, but many of the innovations built into the computer were cutting edge at the time. Remember, typical computers at that time filled an entire room. And it proved to the marketplace that integrated circuits were a viable component in the manufacture of personal electronics.
Yeah, Wayne, great question, and it allowed us to really kind of wax nostalgic, if you will, on some of these things. But the differences are truly incredible. Check things out at intotomorrow.com.
Head ball coach Steve Spurrier here, and I know just how stressful it can be when time is tight and you need points on the board. Well, just like my fun and gun offense, AmeriFactors is a fast-moving game winner when it's fourth down and your business can't afford a funding fumble. Providing up to 98% of receivables in as little as 24 hours, your business can get the cash flow it needs to make payroll, hire new talent, or purchase equipment faster than ever. Best of all, funds come directly from your unpaid invoices, so there's absolutely nothing to pay back. And if your clients don't pay, AmeriFactors is your defensive line taking the hit. With over 29 years of successfully funding businesses, you know AmeriFactors is a name you can trust to score big and score fast.
800-478-6084. 800-478-6084. 800-478-6084. That's 800-478-6084.
This weekend before Thanksgiving. Welcome back into Tomorrow. I'm Dave Graveline.
I'm Chris Graveline. This portion of Into Tomorrow is brought to you by Dexcom, accurate glucose readings for people with diabetes. Visit Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Now, don't get hooked by the newest phishing scam. To tell us more, here's Ken Higgins with OWC.
Thanks, Dave. There's a new sophisticated phishing scam that is actually working, and I know of several companies that have fallen for this one. It all starts with an email from someone important, like the CEO of your company or a client asking for payment for past work. Once you take the hook, they convince you to send in gift cards or wire money to them to pay off the bill. The emails look authentic. Even the English is correct. But you can easily look at the header, the real email address behind the name, by scrolling over it or by clicking it for details. If it does not match, delete it and forward to your IT department. But in all cases, if anyone asks you for money via email, just call them directly to make sure it was them. Don't get hooked. And now, back to you, Dave.
Thank you, Ken. Boy, that's important, too. And I know what he's talking about, that a lot of companies have been hooked by this, or they think it's the boss, or if in doubt, check it out. We can't say that enough. And first of all, somebody, you know, emailing you asking for money, usually I just can't get to delete fast enough. But if it appears that it's a family member or someone that you think you might communicate with, then, like Ken said, give them a call. You know, did you actually send me that email? No. Okay, thank you. Delete. You know, mark as spam, whatever. You just got to be careful about these kind of things. All the way, by the way, into tomorrow.
OWC Digital, your source for connectivity, offers a wide variety of USB-C, Thunderbolt 2, and Thunderbolt 3 docks to help you connect to your world. Ranging from travel docks allow you to carry needed USB 3, HDMI, and SD ports while on the road, to desktop docks providing power to your laptop, and up to 14 ports to connect to your monitors, external drives, speakers, wired Ethernet, and other devices, all with a single cable. See all of OWC products at owcdigital.com/into. That's owcdigital.com/into.
Do all your electronic devices work the way you do, and you don't care whose logo's on it? Does your tech sometimes let you down? No, no way, right? Not a chance. Well, you can call us anytime here at Into Tomorrow. We will help you with any digital dilemma that you may have. We've been doing it for 22 plus years now. We'll continue to do it until they catch us. I'm Dave Graveline. Thanks for tuning into Tomorrow. Hearing from you makes the show. Your calls, your participation on the program, help for other listeners, sharing with us some tech rage perhaps, even what your favorite app is these days, makes a big difference on our program, because hearing from you is what it's all about. Plus, it warms the cockles of our heart when we hear from you. So do join us. The best way, of course, the audio option on the free Into Tomorrow app, or the old-fashioned way still works, toll-free from anywhere in North America, 1-800-899-INTO. Trust me, if you've never done it, I hold your hand through the process. It's fun, really. And if you haven't done it in a while, what are you waiting for? We want to hear from you again. That's 1-800-899-4686, anytime, 24/7, at your convenience. Our next guest joins us from a drone mapping software startup, informing us how drones can help in all kinds of disasters. He's the CPO of a company called Drone Deploy, Jono Millen. Jono, welcome into Tomorrow. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for the welcome, Dave.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. We certainly have had our share, I say we collectively in the U.S., especially lately, of various disasters and catastrophes. And I mean, I'm in Miami, so of course we had Hurricane Irma. We've had other issues in the Caribbean. We've had issues in Texas and in New Orleans and just all over. And fires in California. There seems to be so many, unfortunately, disasters, that when we look at ways to make things better or how to deal with them more appropriately, why wouldn't drones be in the picture? It seems to me that would be appropriate.
That's exactly correct, Dave. And that's one of the things that we're really hoping to shed some light on here. Just letting people know how these tools can be used both before, during, and after some kind of disaster situation.
And so that's interesting. You mentioned before. I don't know about the during part in a hurricane with a drone. they don't fly big jetliners or even keep them in town. I don't know what a drone will do, but we'll get to that. But let's talk about the before. If you're anticipating a disaster, or you know there's a hurricane coming, so you know there may be some issues with a wildfire that might get into a certain area. Do you then deploy and say, let's take pictures so we've got before and after? Or are you helping, folks that are first responders to deal with the problem? So tell me what it is that Drone Deploy does.
That's a great question. So we're a drone mapping software company, as you said. So we basically help people take really high-resolution 3D snapshots of the world. And those snapshots can be used in a variety of different ways. And so one example in that before situation is we've helped a bunch of Californians with potential landslide areas where we know that there's a risk of rockfall, that there's a risk of a landslide before the rainy season, so that they can get a better sense of what are the big at-risk areas. We've worked with trying to identify rising tides in certain areas so that if a big weather event does happen, we're able to see where will that water break first. Helping people prepare for this ahead of time, I think, is one thing that this can be really helpful for if we know that there is an at-risk area.
I've heard that surveyors, for example, the last few years have been using drones very successfully. And again, even that makes sense on routine kinds of surveys. I would imagine it's also faster, probably less expensive. It seems to me that they would get results much quicker even in a survey environment. Or is it that accurate?
Yeah, well, the amazing thing, if you think of a survey, is a man will be going out with a big total station or a rover, and he'll be taking those GPS measurements, and he does that in a big grid. And so at each point in that grid, he has some data. But the grid is obviously quite sparse because generally they're surveying quite a large area of land. So you'll have 100 or 1,000 points over a good 10-100 acres or something like that. Whereas with the drone, every pixel becomes a data measurement. And so what you end up with is a much, much higher resolution measurement that you come out with at the end. So you'll end up having millions and millions of data points instead of just 100.
Wow. And especially, it sounds to me like if you're surveying, as you mentioned, a rather large piece of property, for example, you probably don't have to employ so many people to go out with lasers and devices and tripods and whatnot, if the drone can do that work and then some.
Exactly. And these things fly themselves, which is wonderful. So all you have to do is press go, and Drone Deploy makes the drone take off, fly around, capture all of that data. And we then process that data to create those 3D maps and models, and then have some tools to do the analysis, to understand, what is the change, where the at-risk area is, what is the volume of this stockpile, how much dirt will it take to fill this hole, those types of questions.
So I'm assuming then these drone maps are probably very easy to share and somewhat actionable as well at that point?
Exactly. And that's, I think, another great reason why this is fantastic data to have in a situation where there's a PINA disaster. Because all of the stuff that we're doing is cloud-based, it's all living in the internet, it becomes very easy to share and distribute that knowledge with other people. And when that map gets updated because of a new drone flight, then the updated version is suddenly what everyone gets. And as people start adding annotations, like, a big marker saying, I found the person over here, or, there's a big risk area in this zone, everyone can be looking at that same data set.
Yeah, it's certainly a lot more useful information than just, God forbid, well, that used to be my home or something like that.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, the before and after, you're going to get that kind of information as well. But that there's a lot more detail, as you mentioned, to be able to use for these kinds of mapping things. Tell me about how drones can save lives as well as a result of what you have done.
Yeah, so in the hurricane-type situation, as an example, when there's been this massive flooding that results, there will be people stuck on roofs, and often there's big torrents of water that are raging down through streets and avenues. And trying to first identify where are these people can be quite complicated and difficult. But then once you have found these people, to try and give them the life vests or that initial guide rope that you can start sending larger items across with. We've seen a whole host of rescue operations over the last year or two where a drone has been that first point of contact, that initial, you know, identification or delivery of that first guide wire.
Wow. Yeah, good point. I mean, there seems to be very little reason why it couldn't bring that first light piece of rope to then pull additional help.
Exactly, yeah.
That's awesome. Are insurance companies using the material from these drone mappings so far to do things like assess damage, whether it's before potential damage can occur or after the case, after, say, a hurricane or other natural
disaster? Yeah, definitely. We've been working with a number, and even just looking at some of the disasters in the U.S. recently, even though the FAA initially said no drones can fly in these in these areas, particularly in somewhere like Houston. Within a couple of days, there were hundreds of flights and operations that had been greenlit by the FAA in order to go out and to help with the identification of people, as well as helping with the understanding of what the extent of the damage is and where do we need to reprioritize or reappropriate our resources.
Which certainly made a huge difference. So it wasn't just people defying the law. It was the FAA saying, no, we get it. This absolutely needs to be done. Go for it. Let's save lives. Let's, you know, determine property losses and things of that nature.
Exactly. And then what the insurance companies are doing with this as well is, you know, there have been talks of using things like satellites as well as using things like manned aircraft. But, you know, if you look at all of the skies and all of the pictures, there are a lot of clouds. There's still a lot of weather that's happening. And the drones are able to fly at a very low altitude below all of that weather. So they're able to capture data even when the conditions may not be ideal.
Yeah, true. And a satellite's not going to get through a really cloudy day. And a low-flying plane is very dangerous to fly under the clouds in that sense. So this makes the perfect sense.
Yeah. And then being able to action on that data so quickly means that instead of waiting many, many weeks to try and turn around that claim, what we can do is create that digital snapshot immediately. And we have that for posterity. If we need to go back and do additional measurements or whatever that is, we can use that snapshot, and the people on the ground can get on with their lives. They can go and carry on fixing up their houses and starting to address the issues that they've been facing while the claim is being adjusted, because we have that snapshot. And because the drones are able to capture that data so quickly and we can process and analyze it so quickly, we're able to start turning around those claims in a matter of hours instead of weeks.
That's awesome. Makes a huge difference. I've heard of local roofers in South Florida, for example, that are using drones to assess damage on roofs because they don't have enough personnel because of the roof issues and leaks that occurred in so many homes and whatnot to be able to just go all the time. I mean, they're weeks behind in doing estimates. So if you put a drone up and shows the damage and where it is and where they've got to concentrate, they have, as you say, that immediate knowledge and can do something a whole lot more effective
and so much safer as well. If you think of, you know, the reason these guys are going to fix the roof is because there's something fundamentally wrong with it. And then to try and get on a ladder and climb around on top of that roof to understand what's going on, that's pretty dangerous for that roofer.
Yeah, very true. Now, it sounds, of course, like drones can certainly be helping with all kinds of natural disasters, but I'm thinking there's got to be limitations as well with drone deployment. What things are not in our favor to be able to use drones?
Yeah, I mean, the big one right now is just coordination. There are over 40,000 registered pilots with the FAA for drones that have passed their Part 107 commercial drone pilot's license. So there's a good group of people who are pretty excited to help out, who have technology, but there's no great way for us right now to coordinate them. When you think of, you know, something like the Amateur Radio Emergency Services, which is a similar type of a movement with licensed amateur radio operators, they've got a great framework for trying to develop how volunteers can assist in these disaster-type situations. We should try and do something equivalent, because we certainly don't want to get in the way of rescue helicopters or manned aircraft or anything like that. But I feel like with good coordination, we could operate collaboratively.
Yeah, very good point, and very important point, too, because, for example, with wildfires, you've got helicopters and planes flying low to dump retardant and water and whatnot. You don't need a drone getting tied up in their lines or worse as well. So kudos to you guys at DroneDeploy.com for helping to make a difference. Jono, I appreciate you spending a few minutes with us. I can see there's much more to talk about as we fly further into tomorrow, so let's make sure we get you back, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having the time, Dave. Appreciate it.
In today's connected world, high-speed internet is a necessity. Luckily, where you live no longer means missing out on a fast connection. Do what we did and get HughesNet, America's number one choice for satellite internet. HughesNet Gen 5 delivers the speed you need where you live. Own a business? HughesNet has plans for you, too. Text RADIO to 35,000 for offers in your area. That's RADIO to 35,000. HughesNet, high-speed satellite internet available where you live and work.
Do you sometimes feel like a tech outsider? Well, you know, you can come with us as we bring you into tomorrow each and every week. We do it right here on what is no doubt your very favorite radio station, podcast, stream, or however you happen to listen to the show. Some people listen via carrier pigeon. That's fine as long as you participate and hear the show every week. We're thrilled to have you tuned into tomorrow. Erasmo's in the control room. I'm Dave Graveline.
I'm Chris Graveline. This portion of Into Tomorrow is brought to you by Atmos FX Digital Decorations for any occasion. Have the coolest house in your neighborhood. Visit AtmosFX.com. That's AtmosFX.com.
Yeah, it's really cool, and I can't wait to put the things up Thanksgiving weekend to take us all through Christmas with Santa and elves in the window, and they're digital decorations. It's really cool. You do need to check them out. Harry in Port Huron, Michigan, listens on AM 800 CKLW just across the water. Hello, Harry.
I've got a friend who has had nothing but problems with Windows. His computer, he's using Windows 10, and for the last 2 years, I kid you not, because I've counted them, he has had to reinstall Windows because it was corrupted a total of 25 times.
Whoa.
In the last 2 years. What would cause Windows to corrupt? No matter what Windows he has, you name the version, he's got them all. When he puts it in, it works for a few weeks, and then it's corrupted. What causes that, and how can we stop this from happening?
Well, Harry, I love your question, what causes Windows to be corrupted? The answer is Microsoft, because that's exactly what's happening. And, of course, Erasmo laughing in the control room because he's on a Mac. Doesn't have those kinds of problems.
And he who rarely posts on Facebook posted something, you know, last week about his terrible experience with Windows, and that's why you should just get a Mac.
Yep. I saw it. Couldn't bring myself to like it, but I saw it. But Harry, now that doesn't sound like a Windows problem, believe it or not. In this case, can't just flat out blame Microsoft. It sounds like a hard drive problem more to us. Windows can usually run over extended periods of time, meaning years, not weeks, without any real corruption issues. If all your friend is getting is a few weeks, then something else has got to be going on there. If his hard drive is on its way out, there's a chance that some sectors just keep getting corrupted.
Yeah, hard drives are not very expensive and are not very hard to install, so it may be smart to just swap it before the next reinstall. But if Windows happens to be up and running right now, he can also run some diagnostics on the drive to see what comes up. Windows 10 includes some basic tools that can scan and check a hard drive. Even running those may yield some clues that would point to a faulty drive. This is not a common Windows problem, much less a problem across several versions of Windows. So you and your friends should approach it as a likely hardware issue.
Yeah, I would recommend a program called System Mechanic. You can get a free version to try and see how that's working for you. And it'll do some real good defragging and checking, and maybe that'll help as well. But do let us know, Harry, because, man, your friend is, and I'm assuming, as you said, you're asking for a friend. But that seems very, very odd, even for Microsoft Windows. And, you know, we rag on them all the time when they deserve it. In this case, doesn't sound like it's a Windows issue, especially that many versions and have to reinstall so many times. And
Yeah, but give System Mechanic a try. Like as Dave said, we use it on all of our computers here. They're up to like version 18. We've been using it since version 3, so we swear by it.
There you go. IntoTomorrow.com for more.
Here's important new information from the Diabetes Solution Center for you, a family member, or a loved one suffering with diabetes. If you have lost your provider, or if you need a provider for diabetic supplies, you may qualify to receive your diabetic testing supplies now with little or no out-of-pocket cost, regardless of your age. All you need is Medicare or private insurance to be potentially eligible. Call the Diabetes Solution Center right now for details. Just takes a couple of minutes. Our friendly, knowledgeable agents will give you free, no-obligation information, handle all the insurance paperwork, and make sure your supplies are delivered directly to your door for free.
Call U.S. Medical Supply 24 hours a day. 888-912-1332. 888-912-1332. 888-912-1332. Call right now. 888-912-1332.
Welcome back into tomorrow. Don't forget to thaw your Thanksgiving turkey so you have time to cook it this week. Just in case it's, oh my gosh, thanks, Dave, it's still in the freezer. You probably need 3 or 4 days to thaw it in the fridge, don't you, usually?
You know, how long do you cook a 13-pound turkey in the microwave for?
In the microwave? No, you're not going to do that. You better start now, though, if you are. Oh, my gosh.
This portion of Into Tomorrow is brought to you by OWC Digital, your source for connecting your laptop to the world. Special Into Tomorrow products and pricing at owcdigital.com/into. That's owcdigital.com/into.
Dave in Lincoln Park, Michigan, listens on AM 800 CKLW, the information station. Hello, Dave.
Hi, I've got Windows 10, and I'm wondering what's the best firewall to get. Is the one from Microsoft good, or should I spend money on something else?
Well, Dave, Zone Alarm and Komodo have tested very well recently, and they're popular free options. But it's debatable whether you'd really need to bother with anything more than what Windows does already offer. Microsoft has gotten a lot more serious about security in recent years than it didn't used to be, and they've done a pretty good job with their antivirus and general security software.
Yeah, some of those full-screen warnings asking for permission to do things are a little annoying, but they're part of a generally positive move by Microsoft, and their built-in firewall is generally well-regarded. Like everything else, it all depends on your needs and how you use it. But if you use it like you're supposed to and you don't need anything more complex, Windows' own offering will probably serve you well.
Yeah, so you might try that just to make sure everything's doing its job. But again, some of the free ones that we mention, and there are many others, Avast and so forth, they almost all have a free version that will do basic stuff or at least free 30 days and see if you like it. Let us know what you end up going with in the long run, because if it worked for you, it'll certainly help other listeners as well. Or you can tell us what you didn't like about some of the other free ones, and we'll share that information as well. The phone number to call us anytime, 24/7, day or night, holidays included, is thusly.
800-899-4686. That's 800-899-INTO.
And, of course, we love to meet you anytime. Check out all of our newest posts and show information and show notes at intotomorrow.com. While you're there, sign up for the free tech newsletter.